Well, it's not the most elegant of sermon titles this week. But I was looking at it, and I just thought that it's such a peculiar thing that Jesus says that I think, really, at least the first time we encountered it, and perhaps even now, if we can remove, for many of us, a lifetime of familiarity with this kind of thing, we respond with a, huh? With a what? What do you mean? I like this part in Mark. We have some of the tremendously human moments, as we often get in Mark, with John and James just being what people have been their entire lives, and that's wanting to get stuff. There's nothing wrong with the wanting of getting stuff. There's nothing wrong with ambition. There's nothing wrong with wanting to get ahead or anything like it. But you have to be asking the right people the right question at the right time if you're going to get where you actually want to end up. And so James and John come and ask Jesus a question. I like how the New International Version puts it. The teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. This isn't just human, this is actually kind of childlike. I was going to say childish, but maybe it's that too. And it reminds me of my nephew, who went through a period of time when he was much younger than he is now. And I think we've assaulted him with this story enough that he's no longer even embarrassed by it. But he used to, he'd come to us, come to his parents too, but he came to his uncles and aunts and such a little more frequently, and he'd say, don't say no. And then he'd ask what he wanted to do, which is something he was always told no. You know, it was like, don't say no, but I'm going to play with knives in the knife block. Well, no. And then he'd cry. I told you not to say no. Well, James and John come and they say, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. And Jesus, in a sense, sort of leads them on, because I don't think you need to be fully divine as well as fully human to know that this is not a request you're probably going to grant, because nobody asks for things that way. If you want somebody to pass the salt at the table, you just say, pass the salt. You don't say, now I'm going to ask you something, and do it no matter what, because you don't have to when you're asking for things that are sensible. So Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And he says, well, we want the two best places in heaven after you. And he says, you don't know what you're asking. You still don't get it. Here we are, we're 10 chapters into Mark, the speediest gospel of the four, one of the fastest moving narratives you're going to read anywhere outside of young adult fiction, which goes at breakneck speed to the point where I usually can't figure out what's going on. I have to ask my kids who these people are. And he says, no, you just don't get it. And the thing that's interesting is when Jesus says, you don't know what you're asking, can you drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm going to be baptized with? It's sort of a classic rhetorical question. Because he said, oh yes, of course we can. He said, yeah, I know, you will. That's just the way it is. If you follow me, you're going to go through what I go through. But it's not up to me to decide who sits where. That's somebody else's decision. And then we have another little picture into the essential humanity of Jesus' disciples, of his immediate followers, because the other 10, when they finally find out what's going on, are indignant. And I suppose it's possible they're indignant at the temerity of asking this question, but there's a good possibility that at least some of them, perhaps all of them, were indignant that somebody thought to ask this before they did. And they're thinking, well, maybe I'm going to get before instead of first or second or who knows what. And that's when Jesus makes a statement, leads up to making a statement, and makes a statement that turns everything we know about leadership, about being on top, about being number one on its head. And he says, look, you know how people do this already. The higher you are, the more you lord it over everybody else. The further up the food chain you are, the better your meal, is one way to look at it. He says, not so with you. That we don't work that way. That's not the way it is in the kingdom. That's not the way it's going to be here. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. And if it stopped at this point, it would be very easy to think that yet here is another teacher setting up an impossible mark, saying that you should be this way. And when you say, how do you do that? Say, well, that's up to you. You need to find your own way. There's all kinds of gurus of one sort or another out there that will tell you where you should end up without necessarily telling you how to get there. You should live a life like this. Say, well, I don't know if I can do that. Oh, yes, you can. You have the power within you. Okay, what do I do? Well, you access that power. Give me $500 for this talk or whatever else it is. And if it ended there, if it ended at verse 44, we would have a certain right, I think, to say this teaching isn't all that great. Setting up an impossible goal isn't teaching, it's actually kind of unkind. But then Jesus says one of the most profound things anywhere in the Bible about himself. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. This is as countercultural then as it is now. On the whole, those in positions of leadership do not serve those they lead in the way that Jesus is talking about. Jesus, the Son of Man, fully human, fully divine, the one and only Son of God, come to make a difference, an ultimate and eternal difference in the world, came not just to tell us what to do, came not just to point the direction in which we should go, but came to serve. And at this point, we may not know what that looks like if all we'd ever read in the Bible is the first 9.5 chapters of Mark. We might not know what that means. But when we've read all the Gospels, we know that this service wasn't just a matter of, as some leaders suggest, their service to you is helping you to be less confused about what to do next. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it doesn't begin and end there with Jesus. He washed the feet of his disciples. He served in a way that at that time was unimaginable, because slaves washed the feet of people before a meal, not hosts, not rabbis, not leaders, and most certainly not the Son of God. And yet Jesus did. Jesus led not just by word, but by example. There's almost nothing in the world more aggravating than someone who says, do as I say, but don't look at what I do. Because I think you should do this, but I don't think I should have to. Leadership, that example of what we do rather than what we say, is so critical. If there's one thing I suspect all of us have learned over however long we've been interacting with people, it's that what we do says so much more about who we are, what we believe, what we think is important, than what we say. Anyone can say anything. That's how we get actors. Say things that aren't even true. I'm not terribly fond of the sort of adulation we pour upon celebrities, particularly actors. It seems sort of silly. And so I tend not to listen to them being interviewed or anything, because the vast majority of them don't really seem to have a lot to say. But I heard a fascinating thing from Antonio Banderas, the Spanish actor, who someone was once asking him some kind of question about of some import in the world, and he said, why are you asking me? He said, I'm an actor. I tell lies for a living. You know, I stand up in front of the camera and I don't say my name is Antonio, I say it's whatever else. And I just thought, well, there's a refreshing take on what you do. And I've really enjoyed his work ever since in a way that I wouldn't otherwise. Because I thought, here's somebody who understands what it means to be an actor. It's just you're saying things. And from that, we get entertainment, we get relaxation, all of which are wonderful things. But we don't go to actors to know how to live our lives very often, because it tends to be very unsatisfying. What we tend to do, whether we do it consciously or not, is we follow the people who live out what they say. And even more significantly, frequently, it's the people who don't even say what they think. They just do what they know. and what they believe. And these are the people that make those lifelong differences. I've been told to serve. I've been told to give of myself. I've been told all of these things by hundreds and hundreds of people, just like we all have, all the way from people on television to people immediately in our lives. But you know who makes me do these things? It's the people who never bother to tell me at all, who just do. People who come to church every Sunday and play the organ just because it's one of the things they can do to offer. Looking at the Presbyterian record, and I can't remember what his name is, but he first played the organ at his congregation in 1942, and he's been doing it ever since. 70 years of just serving. Those are the people that when I come to church Sunday after Sunday and see them there, knowing that they're doing this frequently, not they don't get paid, practice on their own, they take time away from other things that they might prefer to do, and of course most people who play the organ or the piano or lead in those ways are doing something they enjoy, but still they're giving it to the church. They're giving it to me without asking me to pay for it, without asking me to come and shovel their walk in the winter or anything else. It's an example of service that affects me deeply and affects all of us deeply. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. So when Jesus tells us some of those incredibly hard things, I didn't preach about it last week, but the reading Mark last week, about how it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, which, by the way, has got nothing to do with some weird gate in Jerusalem. That was made up in the 400s by a monk for whatever reason. He was talking about the eye of a needle. He's talking about an impossibility. He said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. We think, well, how can that be? And then we think, well, at least I'm not rich until I look at 2/3 of the world. And I'm revoltingly rich compared to most of them. It's a whole lot easier to hear that from Jesus than I remember that he washed his disciples' feet. That he did without sleep to minister to people, to pray for them. That when he was tired and wanted to just get away and be with his friends, and when he was surrounded by people who needed what only he could offer, he provided that. Jesus set, in many ways, an impossible standard. And yes, he did have a bit of an advantage. But he never pulled that advantage out to make those hard things easier. Because let's face it, as God, as fully divine, when the time came to wash his disciples' feet, he could have asked an angel to come and do that. Or he could have performed the miracle of cleanliness, which I've never heard of anywhere in the Bible, and just instantly their feet would have been clean. But no, he did it just the way everybody else would. On the cross, he could have had that pain removed and simply died. Angels could have come and saved him, all kinds of other things. But that's not what happened. Jesus may have set an impossible standard, at least what we look at as an impossible standard, but he met that standard himself. Jesus is not saying, I want you to do things that I'm unwilling to do. He's not saying, I want you to do things I can't do. He's saying, I want you to be like me instead of being like those other kinds of leaders. I want you to have a life of service. And so the unspoken, at the end of his statement is answered by his life. And we look at that and we say, this is something that we can do. And this is something that I suspect we already do a great deal of. In the church, in how we give of our abilities, of our talents, give of our money. We're here on Sundays. And church is a nice place to be together, but there are other nice things you could be doing at this time of the day. It's not a huge sacrifice. but it's a bit of a sacrifice. All of these things that you do, all those things that, we do, that aren't so much telling people this is an action you should accomplish, but are just part of who we are when we emulate this kind of leadership. We can be like Jesus. We're not here to give our lives as a ransom for many. That's not how it works. But we can live our lives in such a way that we more closely resemble the Jesus who said, follow what I do, rather than just do what I say. And give credibility to the difference that Christ has made in our lives every day. It's a peculiar kind of leadership that the world is finally starting to catch up with. People are finally beginning to realize out in the so-called secular world, the non-churchy world, that business leaders and political leaders, whoever they might be, who try to serve those that they lead as well as tell them what to do sometimes, are more successful, are more likely to be followed. Who do we follow? People behind us telling us where to go? Or people in front of us who are going ahead and saying, this is what I want you to do. Be like me. Jesus said, be like me. That I came not to be served, even though I have the right to be served, but to serve. And as soon as we can start moving into that, we begin to understand more deeply what Jesus came to accomplish and what he did accomplish. It seems a little odd, and I'm sure those original disciples just found it hard to get then. That's what leadership is, and that's what we're called to do. Not to do something that Jesus was unwilling to do himself, but to be like him. So we can remove the question at the end. And we can, instead of going, what, that's crazy, we can say when we read this, Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, and say, I can do that. I can't make you serve me, but I can serve you. You can't make anyone serve you, really. But if you serve them, you're doing what Jesus did. You're making a difference for them. And you're stepping out of that whole world that says, I get to decide where I'm going to sit. I'm going to decide on my glory. And I'm just going to do what I need to do, what I'm called to do. And the rest will just take care of itself. Jesus may have known everything that was going to happen to him right from the very beginning. But perhaps he didn't. We don't know what all those limitations on his divinity might have been. But what we do know is that Jesus had the confidence that said, when I serve people, it will work out in ways that bring glory to God. And we can too. We don't have to say this is what the outcome must be. We can say, as we follow the example of Jesus, of trying to serve rather than being served, it'll all work out in the end. Amen.